Hey, and hello, and welcome to another episode of Smart People on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Bianca, and I'll be your host for today. Politics would be nothing without politicians, but how can we help prepare those who aspire to be one? To answer that question, we've invited Professor Max Cameron from the UBC Center for the Study of Democratic Institution Studies to tell us about a new program at UBC that does just that. Welcome, Max. So tell us, what is the name of the program, and why was it created?
Well, thank you for having me on the show, Bianca. It's called the Summer Institute for Future Legislators, and it's a unique initiative not only in Canada but in the world. What we propose to do is to actually train people to become legislators. This is a program that is open to anybody who has political aspirations, and they can come to UBC. We will give them intensive mentoring and hands-on training by practitioners to learn what the job of a legislator is, both in weekend seminars, but also a week-long model parliament simulation.
Oh, wow. That sounds very, very interesting. And I believe it's the first of its kind in Canada?
In fact, there's nothing like this anywhere in the world.
Oh,
we
wow.
discovered this to our astonishment when we started to plan to organize the larger model parliament initiative that this is a part of. We did a study. I had a colleague, Jerry Baer, and graduate student Michael McKenzie, who did a survey of comparable programs around the world. And what we found was that nothing like this exists. Political parties have their own schools for campaigns. There are a number of organizations like Equal Voices, for example, that train women to go into politics. Once legislators are elected, they typically have some sort of orientation session. Usually those occur over a couple of days, and they're fairly minimal. Similarly, there is training for new council members and mayors, but it's fairly brief. It's training that they get once they've already been elected. And what we are proposing is to train people before they get elected. In fact, before they have decided even to run.
Right. Or to see if they're really interested in, you know, going that area, right?
That's exactly right, because many people go into politics unprepared, and they don't necessarily have a good idea of what the job is. So they get into the role of the legislator, and it can take them a long time to figure out what that actually involves, what it is that they're doing. And they may not be as effective as they could be if they had a little bit of training in advance that gave them a sense of things like, what is your role as a representative? How do you pass legislation? How do you write a bill, a private member's bill or a supply bill? How do you manage a small office, a constituency office? How do you handle the media? How do you deal with interest groups? How do you manage the wide range of relationships that you have with the bureaucracy, with your staff, with the conflict of interest commissioner, with your caucus, with the cabinet? It's a complicated world. And most people, when they go into politics, don't really know what that world is going to demand of them. And we're going to actually give them a sense of what that would be.
Yeah. So I remember in Socialist 11, I learned all about this from a textbook, but I guess it's a different story when you actually see it for yourself, when you actually get in there, right?
That's exactly right. Learning politics or becoming a good legislator, just like becoming a good citizen, requires practice. And civics courses or textbooks or reading Rogers Rules isn't going to tell you what's involved. It's something that you learn by doing. Most of the work of politics is learning by doing. But that doesn't mean that you can't create a context in which people can practice that. And so what we're trying to do is to provide a different kind of learning experience. This isn't studying civics in high school or taking political science classes at the university. This is coming into a setting where you'll be given the opportunity to play roles and do simulations. We'll have veteran journalists come in and interview our participants. So you get a sense of, you know, what might it be like to be trying to persuade the public to support a piece of legislation, and you're sitting and you're being interviewed by Bianca, and she asks you these tough questions and puts you on the spot or tries to knock you off message. You know, how do you get your message across, and how do you do that effectively and honestly? Ethics is something that we're going to be teaching throughout all of the components of the course. And so this is the kind of work that you don't get through reading textbooks or through political science or civics courses. You get it by being exposed to mentors or practitioners and by having simulations and role-playing and things like the model parliament.
Okay. And this program, how long will it last for, actually?
Well, we're going to start in the middle of June, and we'll have 4 Saturday afternoons sessions. And then in early August, so it'll run from the middle of June until the middle of July, and then in early August, we'll do a week-long simulation.
Okay, wow. And you also mentioned some mentors and people coming in to speak, right? Can you tell
us? Yeah, we've got a superb group of people who are helping us. Preston Manning, the former leader of the opposition, is the person who came to us initially with this idea of doing a model parliament, and so we've been working very closely with him, and he and the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions at UBC then organized a group of people to support us. We have among our advisors and the practitioners who will be involved in this summer institute include Mike Harcourt, former mayor of Vancouver and premier of BC, Anne McClellan, who was the deputy prime minister and the federal cabinet minister of justice under two liberal governments, under both Chrétien and Martin. Chuck Strahl, who's also been a federal cabinet minister, and Steve Peters, who's the former speaker of the legislature in Ontario. Mm-hmm. It's a cross-partisan group. It includes conservatives, liberals, and new Democrats. And that's important because we know that we're training people to enter the partisan arena. Okay. So people who come to the program will have their partisan preferences. They will have parties that they are members of or that they're connected to, or they may not. And what we're going to do is offer the kind of training that you need regardless of what your political orientation is.
Okay.
So it's cross-partisan, but of course it's training people to be in the partisan arena. So one of the issues that we want to talk about, one of the issues that we'll work on, is how you balance your partisan interests with other interests. So, for example, as a member of the legislature, sometimes you have to stand with your party, work as a part of a team with your party, but what your party wants might be different from what your constituents want or what you think is right. Mm-hmm. And how do you balance those things? How do you bring an ethical approach to partisanship?
Wow. So it's a lot of, like, strategies and, like,
yeah, that's
something
right.
Like that.
Yeah, they'll be thinking about how you are effective at what you're doing. Legislatures are really bodies for deliberation, and they're not necessarily that well understood. Members of Parliament, when they when you ask a member of Parliament what's in the job description, a recent study by the Samara Charitable Organization of exit interviews with MPs found that few members of Parliament actually define their job description in terms of legislation. Mm-hmm. They tend to do things like give voice to a particular region, to speak for a particular cause, to help their constituents, and of course to support their party. But they don't necessarily think of themselves as being legislators, as lawmakers, and yet that's in fact the primary function of the legislature. So definitely we want people who are able to, who are going to be able to come into the legislature and right from the beginning understand what their role is and be effective at that. And we think that that could change the culture of politics. Mm-hmm. So we're not trying to simply replicate the existing legislature. We actually want to look at ways of doing politics differently.
Okay, I see. And as well as part of the program, you're going to invite people from media as well to talk about how do media coverages?
Yeah, that's right. We've had conversations with many people in the media, journalists and editors who have kindly volunteered their time to join us. Mm-hmm. And what we would anticipate doing is having them come in on one of our Saturday sessions and talk to our participants about the relationship with the media. The relationship between politicians and the media is, of course, very, very important. It's a mutually beneficial relationship, but it can be a difficult relationship. And managing that and understanding what it takes to have a good relationship with the media is something that they can hear from the politicians. The politicians can tell them what they need to do, but they also need to hear that from editors and from journalists.
Okay, yeah, that's good. Could you mention some very more in-depth topics that you'll be covering in the program?
Sure. So there'll be a series of modules, and they'll be offered by different participants. We'll start by looking at representation. What does representation mean? Mm-hmm. Who are you representing?
Right.
As part of the preparation for organizing this Summer Institute, we did a focus group, and we, with Vision Critical, over a couple of days, had an online discussion with a group of people who do have political aspirations and who might be interested in this program. And one of the things that was really interesting was that some of them talked about wanting to be leaders.
Okay.
And it was very interesting to me that the reaction of Preston Manning to that was, you know, it's really important that when people go into politics, they think about who they're representing. They think about their constituents. If you say, I want to go into politics, do you really think you can speak for your constituents? Do you know your constituents? Mm-hmm. Do you understand them well? Do you understand their interests? And how are you going to give a voice to their needs, their aspirations, their anxieties? That's the role of a good parliamentarian. Mm-hmm. And so you want to start by understanding who it is that you're representing, and then you have to figure out how you do that well. So that's one of the critical topics, is the nature of representation, who you're representing, how you're representing them, how you balance your constituents, your party, your own conscience. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very interesting issue. Second issue that we'll be looking at is legislation. And how do you actually write a bill? How do you get a bill passed? How are committees used and so forth? I think one of the important issues is going to be the personal costs of political life. You know, mm-hmm. One of the things that deters people from going into politics is that it's very, very demanding life. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's a lot of travel involved. There is a high rate of divorce and alcoholism mm-hmm. within political families. People, I've talked to politicians who have said, once they got elected, their friends kind of withdrew from them. They stopped inviting them to dinner and that sort of thing. And the reason was not that they disapproved of what they had done, but they sort of felt, well, now this person has a different kind of status in the community.
Oh,
and there was a kind
right.
of a distance, right?
Right?
So how do you maintain your friendships? How do you maintain your private life in mm-hmm. the context of politics? You're under intense media scrutiny, and
right.
it's a very partisan arena where you're often being attacked. How do you keep your personal equilibrium in that kind of context? So again, you can read about that by, there are a lot of books that talk about the political life. Steve Paikin, for example, has a number of books on the political life that are really very informative. But I think nothing could be better than hearing politicians describe how they've confronted those kinds of challenges themselves. So there are many mm-hmm. issues. And as I said before, the media, there'll be the relationship with interest groups and lobbies and conflict of interest issues and so forth.
In a sense, I guess, when you are a politician, mm-hmm. you become like a celebrity.
Yeah.
And, you know, every little thing, even when you go on Twitter or when you accidentally say something that was very insulting or
yes.
you didn't mean to, or when you're caught drinking and driving, which you didn't mean to.
Right.
I hope. Those little things really, you know, ruin your image as a politician, right?
Yeah.
Like with the recent incidences of candidates dropping out because of those issues I mentioned, it's very important to really develop a very positive image. And mm-hmm. I guess this course will help you towards that direction as well.
Yeah. Yes and no. Certainly the issue of social media is something that we're going to want to talk about, because you're absolutely right.
Right.
And we've seen this in the provincial campaign here in BC, where, you know, many candidates have actually sort of flamed out before getting to the end of the campaign and have been removed by their parties because they said ill-advised things, or they did ill-advised things
mm-hmm.
During or before the campaign. And in many cases, it's been things that people said on social media that have caught up with them that weren't
right.
detected at the time that their nomination papers were submitted and vetted. And so what that tells us is that nowadays we live in a very different media environment, in which it's always been the case that in politics you're one dumb statement away from your retirement, right?
Yeah,
politicians
yeah.
always know that they're living on that edge, that
mm-hmm.
that you say something crazy or stupid or exercise some bad judgment, and your career can be over in an instant. But nowadays, that's even truer, because so much of our communication happens through Twitter and Facebook and other kinds of social media. And so it's very clear that if you're going to go into politics, you need to be prepared for it. And part of the mission of the Center for the Study of Democratic Institutions is to prepare people for public life. That's why we've undertaken this summer institute, is
mm-hmm.
that we want people to think about, okay, if I'm going to go into politics, you really need to understand right from the very beginning some basic facts about
mm-hmm.
how you're going to be dealing with your communications with the media,
right.
and just understand that anything that you say on social media, you basically are potentially broadcasting to the world. And therefore, one has to be, you know, incredibly careful about understanding. That's an example of the kinds of skills that you need that you don't learn in a civics book, but you're going to need to know that if you're going to be effective as a leader. I say yes and no because the thing that we're not going to try to do is groom people for public life. Our goal, we're not a finishing school for aspiring politicians. We're not going to provide image management or tell people, you know, here's how you construct some sort of mythical aura around yourself to be electable. Right. We're not actually interested in helping people get elected. The parties can do that for themselves. There are campaign schools, and there are lots of places where people can learn to be effective campaigners. So our goal is not to, and furthermore, our goal is not to replicate existing practices or behavior. We want to use this as a space for experimentation. We want to think about how might we organize parliamentary life differently to make it better. Okay. So, for example, in Australia, the cabinet is chosen by the caucus, not by the party leader, by the prime minister. You know, that's an important difference in the way in which parliamentary democracy works in Australia. And it has profound implications for party discipline and for the way in which the parliament actually functions. Or you can compare us with the United Kingdom, where, you know, individual members of parliament have much more autonomy and leeway to say and do things and take their own initiatives. Backbenchers, because it's a large parliament, moreover, many of them don't expect to get into cabinet, so they're spending less time lining up for those plum cabinet posts, which is one of the ways in which party leaders have real discipline over their members. We like to experiment with, you know, we live in one of the most whipped systems in the world, and particularly BC, where we don't have even parliamentary committees. In fact, many parliamentarians say, and they express enormous regret about this, that in office, they don't have autonomy to speak their own mind. They often do nothing more, if you're a backbencher, than go into the legislature and vote the way the party tells you. Well, you know, these are supposed to be the representatives of the people of British Columbia. They are, in some sense, in a system that's based on parliamentary supremacy. This is these are the highest offices in the land. And yet the members are telling us that they themselves feel like they're trained seals. And that's something that, what would the legislature look like if we relaxed party discipline, if we had more private members' bills, more opportunity for members of parliament to vote their conscience, and less centralized party control? That's the sort of thing that we can look at with our model parliament.
Okay. Wow, that sounds like a very interesting program. And it's open to anyone who's interested in politics, I believe?
That's right. It's absolutely open to anyone. So it's not, now UBC students are welcome to take it for credit with the permission of the instructor. So if somebody wanted to do this and to write, you know, they could attend the sessions and write some papers and do some research in the context of this program, and they could get credit. In fact, anybody within the Western Dean's Agreement could do that. But it is not designed primarily for students. This is not we're not designing a model parliament like one finds it in many universities. Queen's University in particular has a very important model parliament. Many high schools have model parliaments. Those are very laudable, but part of what's novel about this is that we are really trying to recruit from anyone who has political aspirations. So if you think you might, Bianca, run for office someday. maybe. I mean, why not, right?
Sounds like a good idea.
Well, okay. If you think it's a good idea, if you think at some point in the future you might be interested in running for office, this would be a chance for you to get a sense of what that life might be like. And we hope to get people from really across the spectrum of partisan loyalties. We want gender diversity, we want ethnic diversity, or want it to be a multicultural body. We want low and high income people. We want it to be as diverse as or more diverse than our existing parliaments are. It's not an academic program. For most people, it will not be for course credit. For most people, it will be folks who are at mid-career, have created a business, or have worked their way through the bureaucracy, and they're now nurses, or they're social workers or teachers, or it could be somebody who has come to the end of a career in the private sector and now is thinking about entering public life at the end of their career. politics is open to all of those people as well as to young people, and we want to recruit people from really all backgrounds and so forth.
Okay, thank you, Max. So the program is called Summer Institute for Future Legislators. It costs $475 and runs from June to August. Applications are now being accepted. More information can be found on the program website at www.democracy.arts.ubc.ca. We're going to take a short break and we'll be coming back very soon, so stick around.
You know, there's nothing sexier than voting on a hot summer day. Be sure to vote in the 40th Provincial General Election, Tuesday, May 14th. For more information, go to elections.bc.ca.
Okay, and we're back to another episode of Smart People on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Bianca, and today in the studio we have Max Cameron with us. Thanks for joining us, Max. So in the first part of our show, we talked about the new program at UBC called Summer Institute for Future Legislators. That it's a new program, and the whole purpose is to train new aspiring politicians. Mm-hmm. Right. And so for the last 10 minutes of our program, we're going to talk about the BC elections, because that's a really hot topic right now, right? So let's talk about the leaders' performance. I've watched debates on TV, and I can't really comment on how they are performer, how they portray themselves. Could you give us some comments on that?
Sure. Thanks.
Start with, let's say, Liberal Party's Christy Clark.
Christy Clark, yeah. In many ways, I think that she has the most difficult job. Mm-hmm. She entered in the campaign at a significant disadvantage to Adrian Dix in the polls. Mm-hmm. She faces adversaries on all sides. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, she's competing for the center with votes that Adrian Dix has picked up. On the other hand, she has the Conservative Party, which is rising up behind her on the right and yeah. challenging her conservative credentials. Mm-hmm. And so she's trying to carve out a space for herself within the electorate that appeals to people who are perhaps thinking about voting NDP, but also to people who are thinking about voting for the Conservatives. And I think that has made it very difficult for her to articulate a program that really makes sense. So she's cast herself as a fiscal conservative, mm-hmm. As someone who proposes to bring BC to zero debt and to get deficits down.
Right.
And yet the Conservatives question her credentials as a fiscal conservative. On the other hand, the NDP is challenging her on issues like the environment, pipeline, social programs. So she's played her hand, I think, as well as she could. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've seen with the shift in the polls is that over time, as we get closer to the election, liberals who have tended to defect away from the Liberal Party, either to the NDP or to conservatives, maybe taking a second look and coming back into the Liberal fold.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're seeing a tightening of the race, and I think that's absolutely natural. Whether it's due to her performance or not is hard to say. Certainly her performance, she's a very skilled communicator, mm-hmm. effective campaigner, and she works very well with the media.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that she's done a commendable job of playing a pretty weak hand.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Dix, on the other hand, has had an easier ride for some time, because he's been able to stand at the sidelines and watch the Liberal Party implode, because they had first the HST rebellion, then they've had a series of internal scandals and defections. And so he has benefited from the sense that the Liberal Party mm-hmm. was coming apart, that the wheels were coming off the bus. And now in the campaign, of course, people take a harder look at him and what he stands for. And he has also been caught a little bit between the need to present a moderate position. He represents, as he says, change that is pragmatic, small pieces, not an overly ambitious agenda like the government of Glenn Clark or of Mike Harcourt, which tried to do too many things, or Dave Barrett. You know, when the NDP comes to power in the past, they've tried to do too much, and mm-hmm. he's trying to say, I'll do less, but do it well, and do it in a fiscally responsible way, to cost out the program and so forth. It's all very manageable. And so that's sort of been his pitch. But he's also facing the Green Party, which is trying to take votes away from him. And mm-hmm. so in response to that, has come out on Earth Day against Kinder Morgan, which has then put him in the position of having to defend himself against intense liberal attacks, saying you're anti-business. So it's they're both leaders, I think, are dealing with some interesting pressures. Mm-hmm. I think all of the candidates are doing the best they can, but it's a complicated campaign.
Mm-hmm. So about John Cummins and Jane Stirk, how are they doing? They don't seem to be, they're trailing behind in polls, I guess, but mm-hmm. how are they doing actually as politicians?
Well, there's no hope of either of them becoming the premier,
right?
And so their game plan is different, right? They're mm-hmm. playing a longer term game.
Mm-hmm.
For Cummins, it's about challenging the Liberal Party and its leader, and wanting to bring the so-called Free Enterprise Coalition back to its conservative roots.
Mm-hmm.
That's his goal. He's not going to win this election. But let's say the election is won by the NDP. There will be undoubtedly an almost immediate effort to get rid of Christy Clark and replace her with a stronger, more conservative candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Liberal Party could come apart, right?
Mm-hmm.
If on the other hand, I think the Green Party is also in a position where there's a sort of a sense among environmentalists that you don't get a lot of traction on environmental issues at election time, right? If you try to sell a carbon tax, for example, as a way mm-hmm. of addressing climate change,
right.
If that exposes you to people saying, well, you're raising taxes on people when they pay at the pump, and nobody wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for Greens, it's very hard to get their agenda on the table unless they run candidates who they know have no real prospect of taking power, but who are at least going to put the environmental issue on the agenda. And I think
right.
that Jane Stirk has already won
mm-hmm.
As much as she could have hoped by, in effect, forcing Adrian Dix to come out against the Kinder Morgan pipeline.
Right. So for Green Party, a lot of people see it as a party that just focuses on environmental issues only.
Right.
But when I watched the debate, she really tried to expand on her area when they were talking about the economy. When I talk about, mostly when I talk about economy, she was trying to trying to connect the two together. She
yeah.
was really proposing I forgot what company it was, but then it was about introducing wind energy
yes,
into
right.
BC.
Right.
So she was really trying to connect the two together and not just focusing on environmental issues.
Right.
Yeah, so...
Well, I mean, clearly, if you mm-hmm. start with the perspective that we have to reduce our carbon footprint,
right,
that
right.
we face a climate crisis, if you believe that, and of course not everybody does, but
mm-hmm.
but certainly that's the position of the Green Party, then that affects everything else. It does affect the economy. I mean, it
right.
means that if you say, I want fracking and liquefied natural gas
mm-hmm.
and pipelines,
yeah.
That does not help us to reduce our carbon footprint. So there are a set of implications for resource development, and therefore she has to say, if we're not going to have pipelines and natural gas and bitumen flowing from Kitimat or from Burnaby, then we need to have an alternative green economy around
mm-hmm.
other sources of energy and other kinds of innovation. But it also has a governance component, which is to say, you know, it's hard to advance environmental issues, as I said, in a world in which our politicians are campaign for election for short 4-year terms. They don't have long time horizons. They're subject to enormous pressures.
Mm-hmm.
They have to fundraise. They have to win votes. And all of that pushes politicians to make promises that are focused on the here and now
right.
and not on where are we 50 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
How do we mitigate climate change or adapt to it? And that I think that means that if you're serious about environmentalism, you have to think about changing the way our institutions work. And so you hear a lot of talk from the Greens about democratic reform. And obviously the goal is to try to push us into a system, for example, a more proportional system
mm-hmm.
that would give more voice to the minorities that are making environment the issue on which they vote.
Right. Thank you, Max, for your input. So before the break, we talked about the program. And just as a repeat, the program is called Summer Institute for Future Legislators. It costs $475 and runs from June to August. Applications are now being accepted. More information can be found on the program website, www.democracy.arts.ubc.ca. For those who are interested in politics, sign up quickly because spots are filling up fast. So thank you, Max, for joining us today.
Thank you, Bianca.
And good luck with the program.
Oh, thanks very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.